Welcome back to Be More Super, the podcast, where we explore the world of entertainment with celebrity interviews from your favorite movies and TV shows. So grab your popcorn and let's get to know these stars better and what really makes them super. We are brought to you by PropStore.com, where you can find your very own piece of entertainment memorabilia from screen-used props to costumes. Now, here's your host, Brian Garner.
So on this week's episode of Be More Super, the podcast, we're joined by another great actor. And I've followed this man's career for many, many years. And you can see him in The Orville, The Wire, The Walking Dead, The Expanse, so many of those. But finally, Superman and Lois is Bruno Mannheim, the wonderful Chad L. Coleman. Chad, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction, brother. It's good to be here.
Do you know what? Literally, I am so, so excited because literally you haven't done a bad project ever. Literally everything I've seen you in, you've absolutely hit it out the park. So I want to start off by asking, why acting and what inspired you to take on this? Well, it's one of the most competitive careers out there. Why acting?
Well, I tell people I didn't get into acting. Acting got into me. It's a gift. I'm compelled and drawn to this thing like a magnet because there's something inside me that just compels me to do it. And the level of joy I get out of doing it. And at the end of the day, can you make an impact on other individuals through storytelling? Ah, that's amazing. But it's a selfish deal as well, because when I do the work, I feel my purpose. Yeah. I feel most alive in my skin when I'm doing it, because it's the magical mystery of it that you can't explain. In school, we had a magazine called Scholastic Magazine. And in the back was the play. Well, in English class, when we go do it, everybody's going, I don't want to read this. Oh. And I'm trying to do it for real. I can't explain that. No, I wasn't taught the craft of acting at that point, but I was drawn to it. So it's a gift, and it's a gift from my creator. And when I honored that gift, yeah, I'm the most alive, because that's what the creator gave me. And the purpose of it is to help others through storytelling.
And you're definitely using that gift, because there are millions and millions of people out there that you've carried along these many journeys, these many stories, which I just think is magical. It really, really is. And as I said earlier, I'm confident in saying that you've never done a bad project. So how do you choose your roles?
I'm going to be honest with you. Work begets work. So if you're doing quality work, it attracts other quality projects, other quality producers, other quality actors, directors, you know. So once I came out of the box with The Wire, which is a legendary show, it was a groundbreaking show in terms of how it depicted people in disadvantaged places and showed them as human and characters and 360-degree people. Once I did that, that was like the calling card. Then you have young producers who were watching that show and inspired to tell the stories they wanted to tell, whether it's sci-fi or horror, you know? So they're saying, hey man, come along on this fantastic voyage with us. That's pretty much how it's gone. I'm not saying that I haven't turned down projects. I have. But these, if you notice, these are legendary projects in their own right. The Expanse is a legendary sci-fi show. If people plug in, you're going to see. You've never seen it like this. And if you, The Walking Dead is a legendary show, you know? So starting out with that legendary show, The Wire, it attracts, it continues to attract that level of work, you know what I mean? And that's not every year. Every year I'm not doing, you know, that. But at the same time, if you look at something like All American as well, and truthfully, if you look at Superman and Lois, there's some real amazing stuff going on. And so I'm fortunate that these producers, I didn't get pigeonholed into shallow roles. I'm known for depth. And that, to speak to that, that is because I completely am a crafted actor.
And do you have a plan in place in terms of your career on where you want to go with your acting?
Now I do. It wasn't always like that. But now I very much want to have an impact in the motion picture world that I've had on television. I need about five, six legendary movies now, and I want to work with legendary filmmakers now. I'm ready. I know what I bring to the table can help to elevate a film. And so I'm very much interested in that, and I'm very much interested in producing my own stuff and then always being of service to foster children and people who face some of the challenges that I face coming up, being a flagship for those who are least who are the or considered the least of these, or who haven't been given the same leg up, out here in the world.
I mean, in the majority of your roles, Chad, I've got to say you always play strong and determined characters. So as an actor, it can get tough at times with all the ups and downs. I mean, how do you keep motivated? How do you keep going forwards?
The first thing I had to learn is that acting wasn't going to save me. That as much as I have invested in my career and invested in roles, I had to personally invest in myself, in my own personal growth. And so I had to find a way to really be comfortable in my own skin. So that's existentialism. And I had to find an avenue that made sense to me, that I could wake up each day and hold on to, that really made sense to me in order to be kind to myself always and to truly love myself. Because I came from foster care, so there had to be some issues of insecurity. And it's like a classic actor, a young man needing attention finds his way into acting. From that, it's always more than one thing that's true. It is a gift, but why did I maintain it and sustain it? Well, I was a young man in need of attention and I got approval. And all of the angst of my life and trauma of being a foster child and being bullied and all of that, I could dump it into roles, And I learned that very early on. I had an out-of-body experience doing a scene from A Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hansberry, and everybody was blown away. But there was also a profound amount of adulation, and the girls liked me. So, you know what I mean? As deep as it is superficial, all of that was going on. And once I felt Once I had that out-of-body experience, it was no going back. And I'm telling you, I took a circuitous route to make it to Hollywood. It was not, I didn't go to Yale and Juilliard or NYU grad and all of the agents and casting directors just waiting for me to come out. No, I was in the military and I was, and I had to get to New York, be a stand-in on the Cosby Show. I had to damn near go door to door with this talent. But I will say, my teachers in high school nurtured me. I was sure of what I could do by the time I was 15 years old. And no one was going to knock me off that. If I had to go 13 extra blocks down and 14 blocks over, I was going to be where I am today. And I'm still aspiring to higher heights. I have not reached the pinnacle of what I perceive to be the type of success I'm looking for in this business.
Well, looking at your IMDb, you definitely are not slowing down. And from what you've just said then, I presume there could be an autobiography coming out very, very soon. A memoir, an inspirational journey with Chad, which I'm sure everyone would read. I mean, let's talk about Superman and Lois, because literally, as soon as you got attached and some other actors got attached as well, the internet went wild. And superheroes, to me, wouldn't be the same without the villains. I gravitate at times towards the villains because I think there's more behind the eyes with villains.
That's right.
There is more underneath cooking away. So talk us through how this role came about for you, because if I'm right in saying, you didn't even have to audition for the role.
That's correct. This is very interesting how it came about. My very dear friend, Evan Dexter Park, who's a fantastic actor, we have a brotherhood. So we're the type of guys that'll call each other and say, hey, man, did you audition for that? You should go in for that. So we were having a powwow and having some delicious Indian food and talking about what we both had self-taped for. And he said, yo, did you self-tape for that Superman thing? And I said, I don't know anything about any Superman thing. He said, you should self-tape for that. So the next day, my agent called and said, we have an offer for Superman and Lois. This role was written for you. And I said, wait a minute, hold on. That's in the breakdowns, guys. They said, yeah, they weren't supposed to release it in the breakdown. They wrote it for you. I said, give me a second. I call Evan. I said, Evan, send me the breakdown. And he sent it to me. I sent it to them. They were like, yeah, we know. They made a mistake, Chad. That we've been talking to them for weeks about this for you. And this is something they do that I wish they wouldn't, but they think they're protecting you, right? What if it goes south? You know, they think that you can't handle rejection sometimes. It's not mean-spirited. It's in the spirit of trying to protect my psyche. But yeah, this was going on the whole time. And then they called and said, you have the offer. And now I've worked with Greg Berlanti twice before, you know, on Arrow and on All Americans. So I thank him. And I tell you, my agent said, Chad, this should help restore your faith that, you know, that your body of work out here is not in vain and that you're not going to have to do tricks for him for the remainder of your career. Somebody really values you. And so Greg Berlanti and, you know, the showrunners and Kiche and you know, the guys from Superman and Lois, these people, Todd, and they're wonderful people. And I'm thankful, you know, that my work is not in vain.
I was just about to say, it's awesome to get to that stage where your body of work, people are now writing with you in mind, such an awesome character as Bruno Mannheim. I mean, what is it about that character that really got your creative juices going? I mean, what is it about that character that you thought, yeah, I've got to take it on?
Listen, man, I came from the projects of Richmond, Virginia. If in that place, and to this day, it still feels like no one gives a damn. So he came from South Metropolis like that, right? And then you throw on top of that, you know, the level, I call it the cradle of slavery in Virginia. And then you throw on top of that, you say, all this corporate money and greed, and none of it filters down to people like me who grew up like me. It made so much sense that he became this self-made man, because on a certain level, I'm a self-made man. That does not mean that people haven't helped me all along the way. But if I didn't have a particular drive, ambition, and a song in my heart, it would not happen. So I totally identify with that. Now, kudos to the writer to say, this man of color is about to play Bruno Mannheim. So how can we make this thing layered where, you know, some of his own personal journey is going to, you know, sing And then they felt that way too, you know? They brought that to the table. They weren't running away from it. And they're certainly not African-American men. But they wanted to deal with that. And they wanted to examine what it would mean for a self-made man who becomes incredibly successful to have to go face-to-face with this iconic dude and be able to teach him a few things or put a few things on his mind. And that was amazing to me. So I was, you know, yeah, I was all in.
I mean, with the writing on this show being so good, I mean, the storylines they're tackling in season three, I just think are incredible on so many levels. I mean, with your character, did you have any influence to maybe change a few things while on set in the way that you said things or how you presented Bruno in front of the camera?
No, I can tell you that this was a very smooth, effortless collaboration. They were sure of what I was going to bring. That's why they cast me. They said, no, we want you to do what you do, Chet. And so it was never any philosophical differences. The only thing I would say on set would be just, you don't have to put anything on it. You are all of that. And I wasn't trying to put anything on it. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I'm just that way. But it was calibrating that, you know, especially like in the first episode, you know, when you first start in a role, no matter how deeply profound it is, as you play it more, the more nuanced it becomes, you know. And I wasn't trying to do that, but they would say, like, you know, okay, you got it. Don't put nothing on it. And so that's, you know, that was the only note I would get. And then that stopped because I began to clearly understand, like, oh, that's what they're saying. There's their perception of what's happening. So here's how I can calibrate that. I'm not purposely doing that, but it can be perceived that way, you know?
Yeah.
So I knew how to calibrate, like, okay, like really even less type of thing.
I mean, this season is certainly looking to be more emotional, tense, and exciting than the past season, especially with you on board and the awesome Michael Cutlets that, you know, since Southland and you know, again, another
The Walking Dead.
Oh, The Walking Dead as well. Abraham, it's like a lovely reunion, but on different circumstances. But yeah, I mean, what would you say has been your favorite memory working on the show over the 5 months that you spent on set?
Working with Daya Veda and Spencer Moore II, that's my family.
Awesome.
I can't get into the particulars, but I can just tell you that that's my family. And we went on an emotional journey that rang us all dry.
I mean, do you, without your NDA twitching, do you share any screen time with Lex, or is that something we've just got to wait eagerly and watch episode by episode to find out?
That's a carrot that will remain dangling.
That is fair enough. And what excites me about Bruno this season is the fact that he can stand toe-to-toe with Superman with such confidence and conviction. This is truly a foe for Superman we've been waiting for many, many years. And obviously, Tyler plays an awesome Superman. What was it
fantastic.
Like?
Fantastic.
I mean, was that the scene that we see where he flies into your apartment? Is that the first scene that you filmed? And how was that to film?
No, that's not the first scene I filmed. That was the first scene with him. Yes. And I had to get past my 8-year-old self, you know, like, wow. Because that's a hard role to play, man. That dude is Superman. No joke. I'm not making any allowances for him at all. he is a fantastic Superman. That's all there is to it. And obviously Clark Kent. So, but to see him, you know, in the suspension gear and the way they do it, it just looks like he's coming down, you know? So during the rehearsal, I had to get my, whoa, wow, that's some cool shit out of the way, you know? So I said to myself, as much as you're going, wow, and that little boy is in you, you have to flip that over and have that much disdain for him. And see, that's craft. So I'm not afraid of the fact that I'm gushing. I'm going to take that gushing and turn it into resentment. petulance and like, you know, disdain and toying with him. I'm going to turn it into all of that. And that's how I'm going to do this scene. And that's what people don't understand. Like, you think it's a villain, but at the heart of it, it could be a little boy who wished that Superman had come to save him, which is what he says.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Of course.
So that's why I try to tell people. People think like, it's like, I'm mad at him. No, it's not that I'm mad at you. I resent you because you didn't give a shit about us. Mm. And that's the truth. Prove that you did. You didn't. You ain't saved nobody over here. And it was just really powerful. And you saw Tyler was moved by that without being like, oh, you know, can't be that. Because he is, you know, Superman is an amazing individual trying to do ultimate right. But if I can begin to put something on your mind in terms of, what are you, a selective hero? You know, it might not all be true, but I can certainly project that and make an argument for some for him to think about, you know?
And I think the beauty of that scene was, even when you weren't saying anything, I think as an actor and a storyteller, you could just stand there and just, with the look on your face, you could be saying a million things.
Everything.
Which is,
that's right.
I mean,
and you have to be that full. And that, you know, again, that is theatrical training. When you hit that stage, you may not have time to, you know, cut and ramp up. Within the scene, you walk in the door laughing, and 12 minutes later, you are breaking down crying. You got to be layered and ready to, you know, to access that. And you got to sit on it and they not see it until, you know, so the stage, you know, stage acting. And I tell you, I just saw Jessica Chastain in a Doll's House over here, you know, Broadway. Just a beast. And when you can do it on the stage, you can do it on film. You can.
Mm-hmm. Is that the one that you took Alex to from your social media?
With daughter.
He's been on this show twice, and he's like, the best way to describe him is a lovable puppy. Literally, the amount of energy he has got, he's just literally, he's just awesome. He really is. And
I love this kid. He's so smart.
Mm.
He is so kind. He is so much fun to be around. And he's a little genius, man.
Mm.
And I'm looking forward to all the things. I hope to work with him, you know, directly on some things. And I love the kid, you know. This kid took me to an Ethiopian restaurant when I came to Vancouver. He was a welcoming committee. This young kid.
Mm.
And he and I talk. He's very smart and very creative. And his brother goes to the same university that my daughter was going to, but she didn't know him. But they got along handsomely, and I was happy about that. and then my other friend was an amazing actress, Yvette Gagné, who's like a godmother to my daughter. In that photo, that was my daughter. And Yvette Gagné, and we had a fantastic time. Yeah, he's a great kid. I truly enjoy being around this young man. He's gonna He's going to do great things. He's doing great things because he's fantastic in the role. He has depth. He's got the looks. And he's a really kind-hearted kid.
It certainly is. And then I just wanted to say lastly on Bruno is that me so far, I'm getting a feeling that Bruno is doing all the wrong things for the right reasons. You know what I mean? It's sort of like, and I'm starting to gravitate towards him because, you know, sometimes people do bad for the right reasons and in the way of villains. And I'm so excited to see what else we've got in store with Bruno and how he grows on our screens. And
it's insane, bro. But next up, he undresses everyone, bro. So next up is John Henry Irons.
That is awesome. Yeah.
So I'm telling you now, that's, 304. That's this coming Tuesday. I don't know when this airs, but 304 is mano a mano with John Henry Irons. And I'm telling you, it's equally as compelling as it was with Superman.
I cannot wait. And then apart from Superman and Lois, you are lending your talents to a future podcast, which I've got to give a shout out to, which is Humble Hollywood Podcast with Chad. And you're going to be joined by lots of wonderful guests. If you could let us know a bit about this podcast and why you're doing it and where the idea came from.
Yeah, it's such a contradiction in Hollywood. Well, first of all, I love to talk, so get that out of the way. You know, I love fruitful conversation, man. So that's first of all. But second thing is, it's such a me driven industry. And I just wanted to be able to provide a platform for actors to show their humility and show that they care and show another side of them other than just, you know, what people see on the screen. And but also to celebrate the work that's being done, but kind of just provide a place to kind of solve the conundrum of the just me nature of the business. You know, we there are many of us. And listen, sometimes you have to practice humility, you know? So I'm gonna give you a place to do that. And because it's so important for me to stay. If you're humble, then your feet are on the ground. You know, much of this business is an illusion. And so we get to demonstrate that, no, my feet are on the ground. I'm a father. I'm an uncle. I'm a brother. I'm a cousin. You know, charity is very near and dear to me, not because I'm saying, hey, look at me, be good to someone. No, because it really does matter, like, to whom much is given. That's how I see it. So that was the deal. And then giving other actors, you know, the platform to be able to express themselves in that way. And then at the end of the day, an honest conversation with no agenda in terms of, you know, look, I did this, check me out on this, check me out on that. No, you get to see me in my truest form, my most, you know, unperformed self, if you will.
I mean, we often forget that actors are ordinary people with ordinary lives, with ordinary problems. Yeah. They're just like us.
Yeah.
They've just got a different type of job. I mean, do you feel that these guests that you've got on open up to you more because you're a fellow storyteller?
Look. I mean, I hate to say this, and I'm sure you've experienced it. There's a profound distrust with a lot of media, you know? So they know I'm one of you, and I don't have any agenda. Relax and let the world see who you are.
And is there a guest that's really blown you away, that's really, you've learned so much more about them, that's been amazing?
Christina Loken, you know, Christina Loken for sure. And Frankie Faison, Malik Yoba, you know, all of them, you know, and Charlie Day and Glenn, you know, when they talk about how they made their way in the business and the challenges that they faced, you know, Amy Ryan,
mm-hmm.
when she talks about George Floyd and what that meant and how it resonated around the world and how it touched her, you know, sitting in her, you know, COVID oppressed apartment, you know, I can't say Marquand Smith, you know, who did all the legwork for Godfather of Harlem, you know, and the number of years that it took to bring this project to light and the level of commitment, and his brother being Father MC, because I'm a hip hop head. You know, it's all of them. We just really some powerful, powerful experiences that will continue. You know, we just got to, you know, the business of the deal is remastering and just making sure we got the production quality and just making the deal. Right now, I wanted it to be a podcast TV show, but right now we're just going to have to go with the audio and, you know, and rock with the podcast. But within no more than a year, we're going to do the full TV podcast production for sure and make sure we got the production value where it needs to be.
Well, consider me your first subscriber and your first fan. And if I'm right in saying that you've got Michael Cutlets on the show, I'm all right in saying that?
Yeah, we haven't done it yet, but we had the agreement. You know, I have an agreement with so many that are queued up and ready to go. But, you know, I did probably like 15 with Joe Borden as well, Malik Yoba, and I named many of the others. But yeah, there's like Seth MacFarlane is queued up as well. You know, people that I work with are definitely willing to come and sit down too, because they know me, they know who I am and I know who they are. And we have this kinship. So, yeah.
Well, if only I had the power of you, Chad. I have sent Michael Cutlets' management about 100 emails to try and get him on the show. To get an interview around Superman and Lois. I mean, I'm even considering.
Well, maybe
over.
He's holding everything close to the vest right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose
just getting going. So I think that's probably because the man I know, he would be on the show for sure. But I'll let him know that I had a fantastic time. I will definitely text him and let
that
him
is
know.
Awesome.
Hey man, listen, this guy is. It's fantastic. His questions are substantive, and you know, he honors you, and he's you know, I'm having a good time, and I think you trust my word, and that's real talk. I'm not blowing smoke, bro.
Oh, bless you.
You're a wonderful interviewer, and the questions you're asking, it's great. So, why not?
Well, we're coming to a close now. You've said all those nice things. I've just got one other question for you. Is have you managed to liberate any keepsakes from any of your shows as like a memento? You know, have you taken any wardrobe or any?
No. The majority of things are, you know, because there's like a exhibit in New York for The Walking Dead, you know. And so that stuff went in there. And no, I'm trying to think. No, I really haven't. I really haven't. And maybe I'll hunt some things down, you know, as I purchase the home of homes for me. You know, I would want some things to, you know, be on the wall or, you know, like that. And then I'll seek it out as much from whatever the fans or, you know, production and stuff. But no, I don't, I can't say that I have.
because Bruno's outfits are rather dapper in the show.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I know at times that they let the cast either buy a reduced amount or give the costumes away. So
we got a less season 4. There is a season four, Ted. So can we have that, please? Can you give that?
I suppose that is a good sign if they're keeping hold of anything, because obviously with the Flash finishing, which is sad, and we want to keep Superman and Lois going for as many years, because it is just getting better and better and better, and the depth of the characters are so amazing, because yes, it is a Superman and Lois show, but I feel that it's tackling so many other things, you know, family, culture. And it's just amazing. It really, really is. And I'm loving everything that you're doing on the show. And we're only three episodes in. So I'm so, so excited. But Chad, you've been a great guest. And it's a great honor. And hopefully I can have you on the show again in the future. It'll be my utmost pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on to the show.
Man, check out when it's available to see The Angry Black Girl and Her Monster. That's a film I'm in, and it's doing the festival circuit, but it's going to have a theatrical release. So, brother, just whenever that really comes out, I'll come back and we can talk about that. It's going to be a classic for sure, and I'll come back. I really have enjoyed this, brother, for real.
Thank you for listening to Be More Super, the podcast. This podcast has been brought to you by PropStore.com. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. To stay up to date with Be More Super and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can follow us on Instagram at Be More Super the Podcast and on Twitter at Be More Super. Keep safe and stay super.